Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 44 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about why are we Democrats. We're going to kind of explain a little bit about why we're Democrats, why we fight, why you should vote Democrat. It's going to kind of be a rallying episode right before the big race. We're going to look at a few different elections. And, of course, the big winner-take-all, Trump versus Clinton. This is the final episode before the election. Joining me, as always, is Blue Alabama's Michael. Michael, are you ready to tackle this beast one last time?
I am. I'm ready to get it on.
And, of course, by that, I mean the deer that you hit with your car a few days ago.
How could you bring that up again?
I know. Now your rhythm's going to be off the whole time. I'm going to be like, what do you think about Trump? But like, I think he's got about as much chance as a deer in the headlight. But those stupid deer drive right in the way of the road, pretty much.
I was telling one of my coworkers, and she was like, well, you never thought that you would move out of Alabama and hit a deer.
It shows that a couple of years from now you're in like the middle of Manhattan and then a deer runs over you as you're walking down the street. You're like, what the shit is going on out here? I don't know. But after you hit a deer, you're going to be watching Bambi and you're like, this is the feel-good movie of the year. I love this movie, especially the part where his mom died.
Let me tell you, I've never wanted to go out and buy a gun and shoot as many deers as I could in my entire life.
Like our fan that lives in the basement with 100 guns is like, finally. And then he shows he brings like a basket of deer meat. He's like, welcome to the revolution.
Yeah.
We're going to make those fuckers extinct. What if deer had like an evil plot to destroy America or something? Like, they're all conspiring in the cave. They're like, the humans are onto us.
Donald Trump, that'll be his next argument.
We all saw Obama registering deer right before the election. He was putting deer up to voting. It's an interesting episode because it is right before the election. This is the final episode before the race. But as a reminder to people, even when the election's finished, the podcast is not. We still have a few episodes between now and the inaugurations. Trump may ask the Southeast to secede. Hillary might lose in some miracle. I mean, really anti-miracle, I guess, if she loses. A volcano might explode over Kansas. I mean, there could be a lot of stuff that happens. So don't think just because the race is done, we're done. And I can only imagine what will be in store. If Trump loses, which I think even he thinks he's going to lose at this point, just all of his comments that he's had, what kind of concession speech are you expecting?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he's even going to give one. I think it's like 50-50 he's going to either concede or just go on a 45-minute tirade about how the election was rigged, how Hillary's voters are people that are in the cemetery right now, how everybody's conspiring against him. You go either way.
Well, I saw a hilarious tweet that somebody put out. Trump, in the 2005 pussy grab tape, he blames the microphone because it's a registered Democrat.
Yeah, it is.
Trump, all these people that are connected to him, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, Chris Christie, what do you think their life after this campaign is going to be? Because I think we kind of can almost tell what Trump might do. What is a Giuliani, a Christie, a Newt Gingrich, I mean, what's their future? Or do they have one?
I mean, do they really have one regardless? Newt Gingrich was on Megyn Kelly's show the other night, and like he's just blasting Megyn Kelly talking about how she's obsessed with sex. And it's like, and she was like, really? Me?
Well, I thought everybody knew that about Megyn Kelly. I didn't know what the big secret was. You know, somewhere Howard Stern's watching that, like slobbering over the TV, like finally. There's something kind of interesting about Megyn Kelly. When you see her on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern's just going apeshit trying to get her to reveal like her masturbatory patterns or something, like he's really trying to get that thriller librarian side of her. Newt Gingrich is basically reenacting the Scarlet Letter with her. He's over there like basically calling her a whore almost. I don't really know what he was getting at, because he didn't say you're obsessed with Trump. The first time I heard that tape, I had to rewind it, because I heard you're obsessed with Trump, which is kind of true, but that's not what he said at all. He was really talking about sex and like filth and all these things. I don't know that was appropriate at all, because what she was talking about was Trump being like a, you know, sexual predator and him molesting women. You're dirty-minded. Get your mind out of the gutter, Megan. It's like she's not talking about pornography. Really, it's anti-sex is what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's consensual, and she's talking more about like violence almost, so it's kind of anti-sex. Right. But I mean, Gingrich and Giuliani, I kind of think that they're there for whoever needs them. But somebody like Christie, because if you'll notice, he's gotten more and more quiet as the campaign's gone on. Like, he really has not been seen that much since the big convention speech. He gave a big anti-Hillary speech at the convention, but the campaign's gone more and more off the rails, and I think he's like, oh, shit. Because he only endorsed Trump, really, for ambitious reasons. I think he really he could save himself by getting, he's like, this guy's probably going to be the nominee. I'll be the first big major endorsement. Because guys like Giuliani and Gingrich, I mean, they've been out of the race for a long time. Like, they've been retired for a while. I'm a sitting governor. I can hitch my own star to this wagon. And then now the Trump train is gone off the rails. I mean, he must be thinking, oh, wait a minute, shit, how do I get off this thing? I mean, I wonder what he's going to do, because he's not popular in New Jersey. He can't run for the Senate. National politics is not possible for him because he made such a big deal about arresting Hillary. It's not like she's really going to make him attorney general under her administration. Is he finished? I mean, what does he do at this point?
I think he's finished. And I think part of that, and I know this really hasn't got a lot of headlines, but a new report came out just the other day about the whole Bridgegate scandal, talking about he knew everything in advance. It's conclusive that he knew exactly what was going on. There was an email that was sent to him explaining what would happen and how it was going to happen. I'm not going to say that's why he's been so quiet lately, but I think that he's not getting in the public eye, especially now with the race so close to an end when he's got that. And he knows if he gets out there, he's going to have to be answering questions about that. Unfortunately, for Democrats, Donald Trump does 65 different stupid things a day, so the news doesn't have time to cover something like that.
That's true, and I feel like Christie, there must be a part of him that looks at it, and he's like, this is a really lame scandal to bring me down when you've got it's happening to Trump. But at the same time, it's a little bit more real scandal, because most of Trump's scandals are just that he shot his mouth off, he said something really stupid.
Right, Christie, right. He actually did something.
Yeah, like he actually kind of inconvenienced a lot of people by shutting down this bridge, and really is kind of like a really lame version of The Godfather, because The Godfather's like, I'll kill your oldest son if you don't get behind what I want. Christie's like, I'm going to inconvenience your citizens. I'm going to shut down a bridge between rush hour, and they're going to be really pissed off all day. It's a really passive-aggressive, mafioso tactic. It feels like if a librarian became the head of the five families, something that they would do. There's no biggest... How you change this rule to really screw up your day. When we get into the 2016 races, which obviously that's the reason we have this podcast going, is during an election year, the race is coming to an end. It's hurtling at us like a comet, although not fast enough, really, for most people, even though there's, you know, about roughly a week left between now and when we know who's going to be the next president. To me, I think the majority of the country is beyond sick of this race. I mean, they've definitely got election fatigue. Trump fatigue, whatever you want to call it. There's only a week left, but this has been going on for 2 years. Are you, like, a little relieved to be done with the election part of it?
I was just telling somebody this the other day, like, I'll be ready when this election is over. And I've never said that before. I love elections. Like, I absolutely love elections. You know, if you go back and read my blog, the night Obama won in 2012, I was posting blog posts looking forward to 2016 potential candidates. I mean,
Well, careful what you wish for. Back on the night of, you know, 2012, if somebody had said, well, you know, it's going to be Trump, would you have been like, would you have laughed at him? Probably.
Yeah, I would have.
I want to shoot a hole in something real quick. This is only loosely related to what we're talking about, but now that we can kind of say goodbye to the 2016 elections a little bit, I want to shoot a hole in this idea, because I keep seeing this over and over again. Oh, I can't believe Republicans picked Trump. They picked the worst possible candidate. They had such a good field to choose from, and there were all these great candidates. I don't really know that, like, Jeb Bush and Rubio and all these guys that they think were so great, I don't think they really were great candidates. And so I keep seeing that, like, this 2016 field was so amazing and the widest bench of any race. I think it only looks that way because 2012 was so lousy, because, like, that primary was awful. It's kind of an opposite thing where you had Romney was the best of a bad lot, just in terms of electability and just in terms of, like, how serious he was and everything. But that was only because everybody else was so terrible. Trump, he may be the best possible person for Hillary to face because she could beat him the easiest. But I don't think a lot of the other candidates were really, like, great candidates. Like, yeah, Hillary might have lost to Rubio or she might have lost to Jeb Bush, but they're lousy candidates too. I mean, nobody really was like, oh, you know what we need? Another Bush in the White House. And then Rubio fit everything on paper. It was like, he's young, he's charismatic, some people would say good looking. You know, he's good looking for a Republican, basically. I think with Rubio, though, like that thing Chris Christie did where he got him to malfunction, people who know him really well, they all say that. They said that during moments of extreme stress, like, he malfunctions, like, he melts down.
Yeah.
That's the thing, like, boy, what a great candidate for a president to have. You can't handle stress. You know, like, what an amazing... And then he's like absentee, like his attendance record sucked. He has absolutely no accomplishments in the Senate. He's not a leader. For the executive branch, he's a lousy candidate. And you'll notice now Rubio's running for the Senate. We got a tight race in Florida against Patrick Murphy. Do you think we're going to see Rubio run again in 2020 or 2024 if he wins that Senate seat?
I think so. I'm sure he will. I don't know how successful he'll be. I think when you look at the Republican Party as far as like young candidates that they're really looking towards, I think he's
right.
Really the one that he's kind of set aside as their young candidate.
He and Ted Cruz are roughly the same age, but nobody says Ted Cruz is the future of the Republican Party. Nobody ever says that. Like, if I ask people, so how old do you think Ted Cruz is? Oh, I don't know, 75. And then you tell them his real age. What?
Yeah.
There's no way he's only in his 40s. Like, they just don't believe it. In terms of the other candidates Trump faced, the only one I think really could have beat Hillary is John Kasich. I think John Kasich.
Yeah.
Probably would have beat Hillary, to be honest. I know people would hear me say that and be like, oh, I really think that's by far the biggest threat. Like, I think he could have beat. With her and Rubio, it's a complete toss-up. I think she probably could have beat Jeb Bush. I think she probably could have beat Ted Cruz. I think she will beat Donald Trump. So again, this idea of like this really great field of candidates or whatever, I don't, except for John Kasich, I'm not convinced that anybody had a better than 50-50 shot of beating her.
Let me throw another name out there just to get your take on it. What about Mr. Premature Ejector, Mr. Scott Walker?
Probably not. I don't know. Because to me, Scott Walker is so loathsome. Like, I probably hate him as bad as Ted Cruz. See, people might not remember Scott Walker. He's the governor of Wisconsin. I mentioned him pretty negatively in, like, the first couple of episodes, but he dropped out of the race so fast, there was no point in really talking about him that much.
Right.
If he had stuck around, people would have heard that I really hate Scott Walker as bad as Ted Cruz, maybe worse. For me, I think my personal feelings are so negative towards him that it's really impossible to say he could have done. He's kind of got that Mitt Romney thing of, like, he's really popular inside the Republican Party, but he's not that popular, like, with people. And some of it's my Midwestern bias. Like, I've lived in Minnesota a little bit, and I think candidates from, like, the governor of Wisconsin, I could just imagine him going to, like, Virginia and campaigning, hey, where's the cheese curds, guys? And, like, looking around, everybody's staring at him like, what the fuck is this clown, you know? So there's something about people from that area that's so regional and so specific to the region. Now people hear me say that, and they're like, you're from Alabama. You people are fucking pigs last week or something. You know, they think it's so. But there's really, you kind of have to live in that region to know what I'm talking about. There's something kind of clannish and something kind of insular about it. And I think that he would have had a really hard time campaigning on, like, a national level. And I think, you know, apparently he could be governor of Wisconsin forever because the man had like a recall race and he won a re-election. Apparently he could be king of Wisconsin for the next 30 years if he wants to. But I think if he ran for president, I just don't think he really would have went anywhere. And we saw that a little bit with Tim Pawlenty. Tim Pawlenty had everything Scott Walker had and more because Tim Pawlenty is a little bit more charismatic. Which is hilarious to say that about Tim Pawlenty. Yeah, this is all relative, by the way, when I'm talking about, you know, like it's all relative. But he's a little bit, you know, a little bit better looking, a little bit charismatic. And, yeah, I am kind of smiling when I say this because it's so funny to think about it. But, I mean, Scott Walker looks like just some dopey looking. I mean, he looks like some kid that's been sniffing glue or something for, like, you know, the last 5 years. He's just so weird looking. There was one big threat and one candidate I'm glad was out of the way. It was Dr. Ben Carson. Looking back on the whole conversation and episodes, one of the funniest lines was when I asked, I think it was maybe after Nevada or something, and I asked you and I go, because we were looking at strategies or something, like how John Kasich could win, how Rubio could win. And I go, what's Ben Carson's strategy to a win? And you just about died laughing, and I thought, yeah, that pretty much says it all. What if, you know, when Trump starts his media network and, you know, Trump News or whatever, what if he gives Ben Carson the show? What do you think Ben Carson will talk about for an hour?
I mean, you're not going to hear it, so what does it matter?
He does like a Dr. Oz type show, and somebody comes out and's like, I'm having chest pains. You know what you need to do? Throw yourself in front of a bus. What's the best brand of vitamins to use? Drink bleach. What? That doesn't make sense. Here we are, staring down the barrel of bloated election, looking at a few Senate races. What's your take on, like, Rubio versus Patrick Murphy? Do you think we can keep Rubio out of the Senate? Because I really think it's crucial that he loses. I probably want him to lose more than anybody, only because I feel like if we don't beat him now, we're just going to have to keep every 4 years it's going to be a Rubio campaign. Like, we're just going to have to keep beating this minutes back. And if he loses this race, I think he's finished.
You know, I hope so. I mean, the guy, I mean, he basically said, you know, I'm not running, I'm not running, I'm not running. Then it's like, oh, I'm not going to be president. Fine, I guess I'll run. And it's yeah. like, you know,
I can't believe people in Florida are thinking about him because it's so desperate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's yeah. so obvious that he's only running for that because he didn't get the job he really wanted. So the fact yeah. that he's even close is like, what has to happen for you people to not vote for this guy?
Right. The fact that President Obama has been in Florida for so long, and down there holding a rally the other day, and he spent probably 45 minutes of the speech talking up and talking about how bad of a job that Rubio does.
He did a terrible job as senator. I mean, he sucks. So before he was in the Senate, he was the head of the Florida Congress, like the state Congress, mm-hmm. and he used to butt heads with Charlie Crist all the time. Crist is a Republican you can respect. I mean, I really yeah. believe that. Like, I mean, now, of course, he's a Democrat. As all most, like, this guy's got a heart. He cares about poor people. He should be a Democrat. They run you out of the Republican Party if you care about poor people for too long. But when Charlie Crist was the governor, a lot of stuff he wanted to do, Rubio kept standing in his way. He wouldn't let him do a lot of things he wanted to do. And now you've seen the state of Florida be mismanaged into ruin. From where Charlie Crist had it to where Rick Scott has it, is terrible. And Charlie Crist had to run as an independent, lost, and then he had to run as a Democrat, Rubio, for that Senate seat, and lost. And so I'm like, Rubio took Crist's governorship because he blocked a lot of the bills he wanted. He denied him the Senate seat that he would have done a way better job as a senator. And now he's running for re-election against the guy who probably would be a lot better senator. You look at these things. His absentee record was horrible. He didn't pass a single major bill. He flip-flopped on every major thing he wanted. He ran on an issue of, I'm going to support amnesty. I'm going to get the Gang of Eight. Well, he quit. He gave up on that when it became politically unpopular.
Yeah.
I don't see what's in it for Floridians to vote for this clown. He would be a terrible senator. He'd spend the next 6 years just thinking about his next presidential run and being a mouthpiece for the most right-wing Republicans there are.
Yeah. I hope he's defeated. Kind of like you said, I don't know what's making Floridians be like, maybe.
I don't see how you can have a senator of South Florida that doesn't even admit climate crisis is real. Miami and the Florida Keys, Key West, this shit is sinking, and your senator doesn't even believe it's happening. If I was in that region, I'd say, well, he doesn't have to believe it because he's never here.
Yeah.
He's like fundraising all the time out of state, and he's up with licking the boot heels of the Koch brothers. I saw an article a week ago that said that Florida has lost a lot of jobs from the film industry because the Koch brothers have invested a lot of money in the Florida legislature. And, you know, Georgia, people that watch TV and movies, they might see that big peach at the end of a lot of TV shows that says made in Georgia. That's because Georgia has a huge tax incentive. They give out a lot of tax breaks and incentives and things like that. So after New York and California, the third biggest state in terms of TV and film production is Georgia. Well, it used to be Florida, and now Florida's not even in the top 20 because after Chris lost the governorship, since Rick Scott's taken over, and since the right-wing Congress the Koch brothers have put in, state Congress for Florida, they've let those tax incentives expire. And Rubio's like, yeah, we should let them expire even further. You used to be the third most popular state in terms of TV and film production. Now you're not in the top 20. Like, how much worse could it get? But solely because that they didn't keep those incentives. Not only is Rubio not creating a single job, he's killing them. I mean, like, he's actively killing them because it used to be a big industry of TV and film production. This is a problem to have a Congress that's basically puppets for the Koch brothers.
Right.
Promotes stupid fucking agenda, which is basically don't give out tax incentives to Hollywood. Save them all for rich folks that want to live in the state like us. They always say, we believe in true capitalism. We don't think people should play favorites with money, which is always a lie. That's always a lie, because if money doesn't go one place, it goes to another, and it's just about where does it do the most. But it never is totally. Nature abhors a vacuum. Those tax incentives are not going to Hollywood Productions, which they don't want. They're going to the Koch brothers, which they do want. But they pretend like it's an equal playing field. This really brings us to a big thing, which is that the National Congress, people are saying the Koch brothers, they don't believe in Trump. First of all, they don't want him to be president, and they also don't think he can win. So they've decided to invest a lot more money into the Senate races, the congressional races, the state congresses. But like I said out in the, you know, thing about Florida, you see that those state races have real consequences. Alabama, our state legislature, they don't have the same tax incentives for TV and film that Georgia does. Any production that's set in Alabama probably is filmed in Georgia at this point.
Yeah.
And it's solely because of the tax brackets, the incentives, things like that. So when you have TV and film graduates like me from Auburn or Alabama or whatever state university in South Alabama, you basically guarantee that they're going to have to move out of state when they graduate because there's not a single job they can even get. inside the state of Alabama. These things matter, and I guess what I'm wondering is, do you think any state congresses will be taken back? Because right now, two-thirds of state congresses are Republicans, two-thirds of governorships are Republican. Do you think we can make any inroads at all this election?
Talking about in Alabama or as a whole?
Oh, no. In the whole country.
Okay. I was about to say, it really just depends on turnout. But I think that a lot of people are so turned off by Donald Trump that the Democrats will be able to pick up several down-ticket seats that we wouldn't normally get if there was, say, any other candidate that we were running against.
In New Hampshire, the Senate seat, I could be mispronouncing this name, but Kelly Ayotte.
Yeah.
Do you think she'll lose? I really hope she loses. I don't know that she will, but
I don't know. I'd like her to. I personally don't think she will, but you know, I hope she does.
Yeah. After Rubio, the person I want to lose the most is her, and people say, "Why? Why her? She's so moderate." That's the reason. She's not really moderate. When you really look at the way she votes, to me,
yeah,
she's a really good person to get rid of because she makes the Republican Party look reasonable. They're like, "Oh, you've got." Yeah. Moderates like Kelly Ayotte, she hasn't actually voted moderate on anything. Like, she's always like,
yeah.
Oh, I might support Merrick Garland for Supreme Court Justice, but she doesn't. Oh, I might be for Obamacare, but she's not. Oh, I might be for the immigration bill, but she's not. So she always is one of those people like Rubio. She steps up to the line like she's going to be moderate on something, and then when it really comes time to vote and really comes time to put your balls out there, she moves right back and doesn't. She's not really a courageous person at all. And so, to me, it doesn't matter that she probably is more moderate in private, like when you talk to her one-on-one or whatever, but that's useless. Her voting record is garbage. Like, it's just as bad as anybody else. And I think it's time to get rid of her, because whenever you say, well, Republicans, they're bipartisan, you've got somebody like her, but she's not really voting that way. And so, to me, it's important to get rid of that talking point. In the grand scheme, does it really matter who the second senator from New Hampshire is? Not really, but it's an important thing to take off the board just for symbolic reasons.
Yeah.
The idea that there's still moderates in the Republican Party, because there's not, and it's important people can see that. Then there's old John McCain.
Sadly, I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't either. And I mean that literally, because the man's going to live the same time. Yeah, I don't think the Grim Reaper will take him out of that spot.
Yeah.
The real upset's going to be when old Richard Shelby of Alabama gets beat.
Ron Crumpton's going to take him down. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I wish he would. I mean, I almost don't want to make jokes because I'm like, if there was ever somebody to lose their seat, it would be Richard Shelby, but I just... One thing you pointed out off podcast a few months ago was you were talking about the senators who have been in Congress the longest, and you had John McCain, but you also had Richard Shelby, and it was kind of interesting because out of the ones that have been there the longest, I mean, they're really notable people. Like, people have heard of Harry Reid, they've heard of John McCain, they've heard of Mitch McConnell, but out of that top-tier group of the five who have been there the longest, the only one that a national audience has probably never heard of is Richard Shelby.
Yeah.
And the man, I mean, he's been there forever. He's been there for decades, but I guarantee that 9 out of 10 Americans could not tell you who Richard Shelby is. Even if they probably follow politics, they probably couldn't tell you.
Yeah, Shelby went into the Senate the same year that Harry Reid and John McCain did.
Yeah, so you see Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader. You see John McCain, presidential nominee, and then Richard Shelby. He's done nothing. I mean, he's had a really long career as a senator, and Alabama has not benefited from that really at all. I mean, he hasn't done anything in the area that he's in charge of. His name's on a few buildings, but that's about it.
And he is adamantly standing behind Mr. Trump.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I mean, we've joked about he could literally kill somebody, but I think he could literally kill Richard Shelby's wife, and he'd be like, Trump is a proud American, and I'm not going anywhere. Maybe my wife had to come in, and then if Sessions would be right behind him. She did. I saw it.
Yeah,
Trump's
yeah.
a good man. Trump's a good man, you know. And then they'd be like, no, anything to keep Hillary Clinton out of the White House.
Yeah.
What's funny to me is a lot of these people that have been threatening to rescind their endorsements, like Ted Cruz and Jason Chaffetz from Utah, they all keep saying, we may not like Trump, but Hillary Clinton's that bad. I don't know that they believe that, but I know that they don't believe that. I know that they probably don't like Hillary that much, but Hillary's not that scary. You know, everybody who's so afraid of Hillary being in the White House, Hillary, I don't even know what they think she would do. She might delete more emails, you know, or something. I mean, they're emails. Who gives a fuck, you know? Everybody who thinks Hillary is so evil, they can't really tell you what she would do. Like, it'll be more secret, a more secretive administration or something. But I don't think they really think she's scary. I don't think they're really afraid of her the way they pretend to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I was actually having a debate with somebody the other day about this very issue. And he was like, oh, I care about Hillary's emails, Hillary's emails. And I was like, some, you know, WikiLeaks has been publishing some. Have you read them? Well, no, but I was like, well, then why are you so concerned about her emails if you're not even going to read them? Like, you don't care. You're just repeating what the talking points are. You're just saying what Fox News is telling you to say. And, well, not even Fox News, really. I mean, Fox News is kind of anti-Trump now. So, like, I don't know if you've turned over to that station lately, but...
Well, it's funny because with Fox News, they are kind of against Trump, but they're also so Hillary. You're watching a big cable network right before the election that really hates both candidates. So you have to watch the election and be like, what would make you happy? Like, really, what's an ideal scenario for you? And you almost think that they think by some miracle, maybe this Evan McMullen guy can somehow pull an upset or something. I mean, I don't know what. You have two choices, and if you hate both of those choices, it's kind of like somebody going to an ice cream parlor, and you know for a fact they've got vanilla and chocolate, and you hate chocolate and are allergic to vanilla, and all you like is strawberry, and you keep showing up every day. What do you mean you don't have strawberry? We've been through this. Are you going to buy some chocolate or get the fuck out of here? You know, like, you've been here every day for a week. You know we don't have strawberries.
Yeah.
You kind of have to wonder what they want to happen. I think secretly they really would like Hillary to win, but they obviously can't say that because of their base, their viewers, their base. I mean, they can't say that out loud.
Yeah.
Some people were commenting about Chris Wallace. You know, Chris Wallace, I mean, he hates the Clintons. Anybody wants a good laugh, go back and watch Bill Clinton destroy his ass like a few years ago. I mean, he almost made Chris Wallace cry. I mean, that was amazing to watch him, which was another, anybody who wants to say, well, what's the big difference between Obama and Bill Clinton? Watch that video, because Bill Clinton, he could destroy somebody, and Obama's just kind of like, He gives him that slow burn, that smolder, I hate you, I despise you, but that doesn't really... I don't think that really upsets people that much, but Bill was just like, you little Fox News hit job, you bitch, I'd kill you. You know, Chris Wallace is just like, no, please leave me alone. So I think that's the difference. Chris Wallace obviously has no love lost for the Clintons, but watching that debate, I'm not going to say that he favored one candidate over the other. I mean, he did throw a few punches at Hillary, but I could tell that in the back of his mind, he's got to think, there's just no way a guy like Trump could be president. Like, this scares me. You know, there's just no way this guy could be president.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you get beyond the tax bullshit, right? Like, you get beyond the, I want to pay 33% and it's 36. Like, you got to get beyond that and just think, oh my God, this man could be president. There's got to be a part of you that's just like, the taxes don't matter. Healthcare regulation, Article 9, Section C, all this little petty crap. You got to think Donald Trump could be president. That's got to have like a visceral impact where you're just like, maybe the tax code's not as important as I thought it was.
Yeah. Exactly. Sticking with Fox News for a second, you know, they're probably wanting Hillary to win, not just because they're terrified of Trump, but for ratings. You know, people are going to be interested hotly to see Hillary doing now. Like, you know, why is she so bad?
Right. Well, you got to think, it's kind of interesting to think about, if Trump won, what would Fox News do? Because you would have a station that's diehard conservative, that's their brand. Yeah. I mean, you know, that is their brand. They don't really hide it anymore, right-wing all the time. But they have a president who's a Republican, a president who's a conservative, a president who most rank-and-file conservatives like, who most conservative voters like, but they don't. What an awkward position that is. It was so much safer to have Hillary be president and be like, here's why Hillary Clinton's the devil incarnate. I smelled sulfur when I went into her office.
Exactly.
The Oval Office has got pagan symbols and animal sacrifices. A small child went to the White House Easter egg hunt and was never seen again. So it's so much easier to make Hillary look like the devil than to be like, oh, here's Trump, and he just said that all Muslims should be beheaded in America. We can't really support this. You know, like, what do we do at this point where it's like full batshit crazy conservatism? I think you're right, and I think Fox is going to be that way from here on out because the Republican Party's gotten so crazy. It's easier for them to be the opposition. And the Republicans, they don't mind if they lose. It's easier to be the opposition party than it is to be like, here's a guy like Trump, let's all get behind him and do what he wants to do. Like, it's a lot easier to be like, oh, Hillary, and have your arms folded and be that sour kid in the corner. Some people don't know how to win, and I think Republicans have gotten to that point to where if they really won and they really got what they wanted, they'd be like, please stop us. Like, somebody save us from ourselves. Like, we don't really want to do this. Moving on into, like, why we're Democrats, this is the rallying point. Chris is trying to get people to get out there and vote, because I hear a lot of people, it doesn't matter. Trump, Hillary, it's all pretty much the same thing. First of all, people who believe that, who are you? Who really believes that? Because... and it's funny how you don't hear that as much with this election. I heard that a lot with a lot of previous elections, but like 2000, Gore Bush, same thing. Kerry Bush, same thing. Obama, Romney, who really cares? Flip sides of the same coin, you know? I don't hear that as much with Trump, Clinton. There are different types of Trump people. Some Trump people are just like, well, he's a little crazy, but I like the way his style is or something. And some Trump people, they really believe he's the guy that's going to save America. They really believe he's the American savior. 2012, I didn't hear that as much. Like, people who liked Romney, they mostly didn't like Obama. But, like, nobody said, Romney's going to save America. Like, nobody really believed that. I hear a lot of Trump people say that. A lot of Trump people are like, if Trump doesn't win, the Democrats are going to give all the Mexicans the right to vote. Like, Mexicans don't have the right to vote. I'm not sure what they're referring to exactly. But they're going to take those 11 million immigrants, and they're going to give them all citizenship. And there's going to be 11 million new voters for Democrats, and Democrats are going to sweep in. They're going to keep letting more and more and more Mexicans in. They're going to have a slow takeover of America. Trump is the last chance we have to stop this. Basically, kind of the underlying theme is he's the last chance to stop there from being a Mexican majority in America. They're really scared that there's going to be a Mexican majority. It's going to push them out of power. They're never going to have power again. They feel like Trump is their last chance to stop this. So I hear them say he's the savior of America, and Hillary is a witch, and it's the emails, like you said, or something else. They basically don't know why they hate her. They just hate her. And that's why they hate her. For the Hillary people, same thing. Trump's going to start World War III. Trump is dangerous. Trump is a lunatic. He's mentally unstable. He's a sexual predator. I mean, really strong reactions. And I think it's safe to say that, like, a lot of what we don't hear this time is, well, both parties are basically the same. I've heard that less this election than any other election. Yeah. But I have heard a lot of people say, I don't like Trump, I don't like Clinton. So you see that all the time. When you look at their unfavorable ratings, the second most unfavorable rating of all time for presidential candidate is Hillary. The most unfavorable is Trump. So they have historic lows. Even when Hillary wins, even when she takes office, she's going to have to fight this perception of people don't like her. And I like Hillary. I love Hillary. You like Hillary. Most people we know love Hillary. But for some reason, a lot of people don't like her. So I think maybe we should tell people why we're Democrats, why we're voting that way, why they should vote Hillary, and really get behind her. Because, hey, let's be honest. We're two white guys, heterosexual males from Alabama. It'd be a hell of a lot easier if we were Republicans. I mean, it's not easy to be a Democrat in Alabama, especially when you got this profile that we've got. It's not easy. And so when I meet people in L.A. and New York, and they're like, oh, you're Alabama, blah, 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 I'm like, well, you don't really know what you're talking about, because it's easier for you to be a Democrat. Everybody you know is a Democrat. Everybody you went to college with. I went to a fairly conservative university, Auburn University. In the Harvard Review, they were voted most conservative state school in America 2 years ago. So I went there at the end of the Bush administration. In 2008, George W. Bush could barely show his face in America without getting tomatoes thrown at it. Everywhere I went, I still saw those damn W stickers. Dick Cheney gave the commencement address the semester before I graduated at Auburn. It's a really conservative area. It's a really Republican area. It's very popular, and it's not easy to be a Democrat. And so when we are, people might want to listen to why that is, because maybe we think of things a little differently than somebody who it's a lot easier because their background is Democrat.
Okay. Just to start us off, for me, I'm more of a Democrat. When I look at the issues, the number one issue for me is the one that's the least sexy, and I think that it comes down to economics. Just no way I can ever support Republicans' economic theories and economic plans, and it comes down more than just, tax rate or this or that. You know, when you're talking about spending, when you're talking about things like growing the government to include trying to deport, millions of
illegal immigrants when you're talking about banning the government to fight wars all over the country, when all of this unnecessary growth and spending that we cannot sustain. The Republicans love to talk about the debt, but yet they have zero plan to fix the debt. Their plan to fix the debt is by taking in less money. I don't think people get that. I was asking somebody one time, I was like, let's say that you're on a fixed income and you make, you know, $1,000 a month, but you spend $1,100 a month. Now, you know, let's say that you come up with a great idea to cut your income by $500. That's essentially the Republicans' tax plan when they're talking about cutting all these taxes for, you know, millionaires and billionaires. Just looking at their economics does not make sense.
Right.
So to me, yes, do I think the debt is a problem? I do. Do I think it's going to destroy America? No, I don't. But just looking at the economic side of an election, there's really no comparison there.
With trickle-down economics, it doesn't even make psychological sense. Because when you tell people, we're going to give all this money and all this power to this guy, a guy has 10 factories, and he's going to have so much money and so much power, we're going to give him more factories. Oh, he's got 20 factories. Why is he going to let you open one to compete with him?
Yeah.
So trickle-down economics basically guarantees that eventually, if you take it to its logical conclusion, you're going to have monopolies forming, basically.
Yeah.
Because when you say AT&T can buy out Time Warner, and then 2 years from now, Apple can buy them both out, and then 3 years from now, Google can buy Fox, and they can also buy Verizon. And like when you let these companies get bigger and bigger, you're going to have two corporations in America, basically. And, I mean, you're already dealing at an age where a startup business or an entrepreneur, they're facing a really steep uphill disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, our proposals are good for small business people. Our proposals are good for entrepreneurs.
No.
They're so not. They're exactly the opposite. They favor people who have already been in business, people who have been in business for years and decades. Well, we're going to give all these advantages to the guy who's already got 10 factories. He's going to become so insurmountable. If you want to open one factory, he's going to crush you because he doesn't want any competition. He's not going to let there be any competition. So the second you open one factory, he's going to lower all his prices, lower all of his rates. You're going to go out of business in 6 months because you have limited capital. The tax thing and all that shit, that's only a problem for people who are already making a lot of money, basically.
Yeah.
And so when you are not a startup entrepreneur, you suffer from a capital disadvantage. So you're going to have to constantly think about ways to raise money. And he doesn't have to think about that because he's paying almost nothing in taxes. And he can basically manipulate the markets around him to give you everybody around him out of business. Look at trickle-down economics. There's like the Walmart theory. Whenever Walmart moves in, they put 4 or 5 small businesses out of business. And that's a little bit of the way that I look at it. Is like there's going to be so many people who, to me, it's like, oh, the more money rich people have, they're going to create jobs. That's the argument for trickle-down economics. To me, the more money they have, the more dangerous they become because they're going to kill jobs. They're going to kill jobs for the people who are competing against them. So it's never a good thing when more and more and more money and wealth and influence goes to the 1% or fewer and fewer individuals. And then, more and more people are not receiving those advantages. That's economically. Then, I mean, we saw that firsthand growing up in Alabama. Most people are poor, yet most people vote Republican. So that classic, like, what's the matter with Kansas? What's the matter with Alabama? Like, why do the poorest states usually vote Republican? It's a little bit of the plantation economy. Another word for trickle-down economic economy, I know I said this several episodes ago, is the plantation economy because you're basically convincing more and more people to do most of the work while the 1% receives more and more of the money. I'm going to need you to come in and work harder and longer and more hours. Okay, where's all that extra money going? Well, it's going to me. But here's why that's good for you. You got to read The Fountainhead. Yeah. It'll all make sense tomorrow. You know, you just got to read Ayn Rand. It's going to all make sense. So, it really is for suckers and things like that. And then when you look at America, I mean, I'm proud to be an American. I've gone on record as saying I do believe it's the best country that's ever existed. And I'm not just saying that because I'm from there. I think there's different things like democracy. It's the wealthiest country that's ever existed in the world is the most racially inclusive country that's ever existed in the world. Barack Obama's the first minority president democratically elected in the world. Hillary Clinton's about to be elected. People from all over the world can come here and they can make it. My wife's Nigerian. She can come here and she can make it. Our neighbors are from China. They can come here. They can make it. We know people from Laos. They can come here. They can make it. You can be from Africa, Asia, Europe, and you really can come here and you really can make something middle class or upper middle class out of yourself. And so there's not many countries you really can say that about. As much as we think you can say that about certain places, you really can't. You kind of have to be from that area, speak that language, learn all those things. So I believe in America. But when I look at the things that make America great and the specific programs, Social Security, FDR, Medicare, LBJ, you know, you really run the winning World War II, LBJ. All of the technological advances are mostly under people like Al Gore, who did help invent the Internet, even though Republicans make fun of him for that. Harry Truman, who did shepherd a lot of the science stuff that was going on during World War II. Bill Clinton, he helped shepherd in the tech boom and create all those jobs. Barack Obama's trying to get the Green Revolution going with the energy jobs. Most of what we've really seen in America, the programs we like, the stuff that works, the stuff we love, these are almost exclusively Democratic ideals and Democratic programs. Yeah. Now, of course, if we do the Republican counterpoint, they're going to say, well, what about Abraham Lincoln? I'm like, the fact you have to go back to 150 years should tell you something. You know, like the fact you have to go back longer than a century to make your point of Republican greatness, that should tell you something. What has the Republican Party contributed to people in the last century? Reaganomics. That's their claim to fame. In the last century, Republicans have produced Watergate, Warren G. Harding's scandal, which is why Warren G. Harding was almost impeached. Gerald Ford, the less said the better. Two different Iraq wars. The war in Afghanistan. They let Osama bin Laden escape. I mean, there's no contest. There's really nothing that they've done that they can point to as a record of success. And Democrats, from the Great Depression to World War II, they've been tested over and over again, and usually we've come out a lot better than we were before.
You didn't even mention JFK and the space race.
That's a good one, too, where it was JFK, we're going to put a man on the moon. Republicans made fun of him. They said, this is an idiot. This guy's a man on the moon. What's this guy talking about? Every great technological advantage and social program, people always say, liberals, they're bleeding hearts. They produce all these social programs that don't work. Tell that to people over 62 that have Medicare and Social Security. They think those programs work. They work pretty good for those people who use them. Tell that to students who get Pell Grants. Tell that to soldiers when they come back from war. But the veterans, they almost, you know, majority of the soldiers vote Republican. Why? All of the shit that's good in your life is from Democrats. All of the advantages you have when you come back, the scholarships, the medical benefits, the pay increases, all that was FDR, who wanted the GI Bill. Everything people really use and take advantage of in the middle class, even the upper middle class, and especially the lower class, they're all Democratic programs. And I think part of it is that Democrats maybe have forgotten that, and they haven't sold that. I don't really hear a lot of Democrats talk about the GI Bill, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, they're kind of all over the place on these social issues, but if they really got it, here's what works in your life, it's us. You know, I think that might be a stronger argument.
Absolutely.
What do you, really, when we talk about what's the matter with Alabama, what's the matter with Kansas, people don't ever want to say this. Now, I'm going to say this, and people might get mad. When we talk about soldiers in America, they're great. They're the salt of the earth. They're what make America great, this and this and this. Well, why do they vote Republican? I don't understand that at all. Because to me, you look at the Iraq War, you look at Afghanistan, we don't want to go to these wars, we don't want to be in these armed conflicts. Well, why are you voting for the people putting you there? Obama didn't put, you know, 10,000 troops in Syria and 5,000 troops in Libya. I mean, we bombed a little bit, we dropped some missiles. We didn't put boots on the ground. We didn't put lives in danger. So to me, they don't like Obama. They think he's weak. They think he's ineffectual. They don't think he knows what he's doing. Well, he knows enough to not put you in a place like Libya or Syria where you have no exit plan and there's no way to escape.
Exactly.
When Black Hawk Down happened, Bill Clinton wasn't like, you know what we need to do? Put 10,000 troops in Somalia and try to make a country that's unlivable, try to turn that into Europe. He didn't do what Bush did. Yeah, it was bad that, like, you know, some troops died in Black Hawk Down, but it would have been 100 times worse if somebody like Bush had been president, because he would have just put more and more and more bodies into the meat grinder. I mean, there was no way to... I'd like to see that. So I'm declaring war on Somalia. What's your plan? We're going to send 10,000 troops there. By the end of the year, we're going to open the first Starbucks. We're going to build a mini mall, and we're going to have these troops guard that mini mall day and night. They're going to eat and sleep and shop there. Their money will go into the mini mall, and the economy will branch out around it. But there'll be tax cuts for the 1%. I'd like to see a Somali warlord. I believe in trickle-down economics. I should have more bullets because I have, because I'm wealthier. More bullets should go to me than the next warlord. No, you asshole, I'm not going for that. You're a communist.
No.
I'd like to see the Somali warlord have an argument about Reaganomics, you know?
I would love to see Bush, like, trying to figure out, like, we're going in and we're going to overthrow the government. Well, where is the government? He's sending soldiers to, like, every city in the country, like, where's the government?
They get to some guy's house. The government's my neighbor. It's over there. You got to go across the street. They get to the neighbor's house. No, 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 my friend, my friend, my friend. You got to go to the next village. The government's there or whatever. There's some guy who used to be the president, and he's wearing a shirt that says, I'm the president. And then he's like, no, no, I'm not the president. This is my cousin's shirt. My cousin gave me this. You want him. He's in the next village over there. So... it'll show like a bunch of teenagers in a boat, like out there, they're about to rob a cruise ship, they're pirates, and then somebody's like, yeah, that's the government. They just blow up like a boat full of pirates and say, oh, we it's over. We did it.
Yeah.
That would be something. But I mean, when it comes to, you know, why we're Democrats, I think, we were kind of young when Bill Clinton took office. I think that was kind of the beginning. Because Bill Clinton took office, and this felt like a president that I related to him. And so when I see a lot of, like, ultra-liberals or far progressives or socially conscious liberals, whatever you want to call it, just tear him down and talk shit about Bill and make him sound like the devil, got a lot of people like me to be involved in the Democratic Party because it didn't feel so hopeless. It was like the Democrats weren't totally out of power because Bill Clinton was in the White House, and he was a Southern Democrat. I mean, he looked like me. He talked like me. He had, like, a similar background. He knew a little bit about what I knew about. And really, you know, the last several Southern presidents were all Democrats, Jimmy Carter, LBJ, Bill Clinton. And then the Republicans were like Bob Dole, had no connection to George H.W. Bush, who was from the Northeast, Reagan, who was from California. I mean, these weren't people that I thought really even understood Alabama. So it was kind of interesting that even though everybody hated the Democrats in Alabama, they seemed like the party that understood us better.
Clinton was really the first to reach out to young people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he's the first president to be on MTV. He was somebody that actively, like, reached out to young people, and he could relate to them and talk to them. I think that's the beauty of Clinton. He could take something complex and talk to a bunch of teenagers and make them understand it.
Well, I think it's really weird to see, like, people now in the Black Lives Matter movement act like Bill Clinton is Strom Thurmond or something like that. Like, they treat him like George Wallace or some shit. And I'm like, Bill Clinton was playing saxophone on Arsenio Hall, and George H.W. Bush, like, I know what I'll do. I'll stand behind Pat Boone as he plays the harmonica or something like that. Like, that's his idea of, like, reaching out to black voters or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, Bill Clinton's on MTV. Go ask George H.W. Bush, what does MTV stand for? Is that some kind of new prescription drug? I might need that one for my blood pressure.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't know what MTV was. Bill Clinton would go and talk to people, and when somebody in the audience says George H.W. Bush a question, he checked his watch. He's like, how long do I have to listen to this woman speak?
Yeah.
It was the Republican Party was cold and aloof. They didn't care about black people. They didn't really want to know women that well. When George H.W. Bush would talk about women, it was Murphy Brown's a slut. I mean, it was really talking down to them in a way. Bill Clinton, he was horny. He grabbed women, blah, 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 sexual harassment. But he understood women in a way that the Republicans at that time especially did not understand them at all. And they didn't want to know them. That was the difference. Now, I know people making the joke, Bill, he wanted to know women, all right, ha, ha. You know, he wanted to know people. And I think that was the difference, was to listen to people. He wanted to know them. Hillary's the same way. When black people and women and gay people, when all of the activists in the Democratic Party, and there are hundreds of different groups, come to speak to her, she seems like she wants to know them. I think that's the difference. I just think Democrats were always more concerned with people.
Yeah.
Like, it was, you see that all the time. I mean, you see that in the presidential race, the vice presidential race. When Paul Ryan and Joe Biden are debating, Joe Biden is talking about people. Paul Ryan is like, well, if you look at my article on this spreadsheet, you can see that if all we have to do is cut all of the heart medicine across the country and we can take $2 trillion. Yeah, but Paul, like, 50 million people are going to die. But look at the savings. Imagine the money we'll save.
Yeah.
It just felt like they didn't care that much. And like you said, I mean, people who go on and on and on about the deficit, they have no plan to fix it. Their plan to fix it is to give out a huge tax cut that is going to run up the deficit. Even if, well, we're going to cut spending. We're going to cut spending. Even if you laid off the entire federal government, you couldn't get rid of income tax. So somebody like Mike Hood could be saying, we're going to have this flat tax of 25% consumption. You could lay off the entire federal government and you couldn't pay for that. A consumption tax means nothing in the globalized economy where, let's say you do that, 25% consumption tax on all American items. I'm going to go on Amazon and everything I order is going to be from China. Nothing stops you from doing that, nothing. So overnight, you kill American jobs in manufacturing. And Bob Dole was popular in Alabama for some reason. But again, it felt like, here's this old man who's like this crusty Midwestern guy who's kind of a snob, probably looks down on the Southeast in his heart of hearts. Here's Bill Clinton from Arkansas. Yeah. I always felt that way. I'm like, we're voting for people who don't care about us. George H.W. Bush, Bob Dole, Reagan, these are people who don't really give a shit about Alabama. Bill Clinton's from this background. He understands us better. He cares about us more. Even the governorship. Don Siegelman, we were in the middle school when he was the governor. I know we talked about him a bunch, but he was a Democratic governor. He went out and tried to bring car dealerships to Alabama. He wanted a similar tax incentive package that Georgia now gives to their TV and film. He wanted to do that for Alabama. So all these shows like Walking Dead and all this stuff, they could have been filmed in Alabama if we'd passed that tax incentive package 20 years ago when he wanted to do that. Everybody, Don Siegelman's Hollywood. He's Hollywood. Again, you had a Democrat who was trying to bring jobs, trying to bring progress, trying to do this. For his trouble, he winds up in a jail cell. Then the last two Republican governors, they haven't done anything. I mean, they basically sat on their butt, expected, like, things to happen, and then they don't happen. And then it's like, well, we're still going to keep reelecting these people. It always comes down to one party is trying. Republicans don't think government works, so they don't even try to make it better. They don't believe government should be recruiting businesses. They don't believe they should be picking favorites with tax incentives. They don't believe they should be giving money away to single moms. They don't believe they should be doing anything. So they don't do anything, and then shit falls apart around them, and they wonder why. Because the free market was supposed to do it, but the free market is not leadership. Every business out there is just thinking about itself. A business is not thinking about, here's what will be great for the entire economy as a whole. They have to think about their own profit first.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're not thinking about the entire web. That's the government's job, to think about how all the pieces fit together and how you manage unemployment rates in the long term and all that stuff. So when all this shit gets worse, well, I thought the free market was going to create something. And you know what it is? It's the Democrats and they're meddling or whatever. And then Democrats have to come in and be like, actually, if you actually have a plan and you actually look at stuff like long-term unemployment, you can do something about it. And then these things magically get better, except it's not magic because we're doing something about it. And then it's like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know how this all came together. This is a miracle. What issues, if you had to pick a top three, top five, what issues are you the most liberal, the most democratic?
Economics, climate change, and education.
Those are three really good ones. Yeah, those are good ones. I'd probably be the same way. I think climate crisis, what could be bigger than the end of the world? Education, obviously, the worse education gets, the more uneven the playing field. Economics, I mean, I'm very pro-union. I think unions get a bad rap.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a coincidence. Over the last 30 years, private sector unions have gone down and down and down, and so has the middle class. But that's not a coincidence. I would also say pro-choice. I think it's important that people are able to choose abortion. I would say all those things. And then there's all of the things that I wouldn't put in the top three, but I'm still a liberal on. I'm pro-gay marriage. And then anti-grabbing women by the pussy. I feel confident taking a strong stand. I feel confident that I'm anti-sexual harassment. I feel pretty good about being against that. Pell Grant, I'm for that. For kind of what Bernie Sanders was talking about, where some college, I'm not saying you could do blanket free college to everybody, but I think a society where college is so expensive that most of the people can't afford to go, you're talking about a population that's going to get dumber and dumber and less qualified. And you'll eventually see a place where the job market outpaces the people we have living here. Like our jobs are going to get more and more high tech, and we're not going to have people to work them because they can't afford the college degree that they need to perform these jobs. Some type of maybe free vocational school, associate degree, two-year school, some state college scholarships, more than what we already have. Yeah, college tuition should definitely come down from where it is.
Yeah.
If not free, then it should definitely come down from where it is. And
right.
I wouldn't be totally against a cap on how much tuition you could charge because some schools are getting away with murder, really.
Yeah.
If you think of anything else in terms of why are we Democrats? Why should people vote? Why does it matter? Get out there, be Democrats, vote. Don't just vote for president, vote for all the down-ticket races.
I just wish people would get educated. When you go to vote, actually look at the candidates, look at their stances on all the issues. Vote personally. Which candidate is going to, be selfish about it, which candidate is going to help you the most? And I think if people do that, 9 out of 10 are going to come away and say, you know what? It's the Democrats.
Final predictions, Trump, Hillary, who's going to take it all?
Going to be a top, no, Hillary.
Right.
Without
when it comes to the swing state, Missouri, Ohio, Virginia, Florida, Pennsylvania, what are your predictions?
Trump probably will Ohio. I think Hillary sweeps the rest.
I think Hillary will definitely win Pennsylvania. I think she'll definitely win Virginia. I think her strongest chances are Pennsylvania and Virginia. Her weakest shot might be Missouri. I don't know why, but I think he might win Missouri.
Well,
to me, Ohio and Florida are real toss-ups. And it's kind of funny because if she wins every state that they think she'll win, she could probably lose Ohio and Florida, and it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't surprise me if Trump won Missouri and North Carolina, and it wouldn't surprise me if she won Pennsylvania and Virginia, and then Ohio, Florida, I think they could split them. I think one could go for Trump and one could go for Hillary, and I'm not sure which one's which. They said Hillary is slightly ahead in Ohio and Trump is slightly ahead in Florida, but that could change. Florida's so corrupt, and Rick Scott is such a big Trump supporter, and they've already had so many problems with voting. I mean, they're usually the last state. It's funny because they're on the East Coast, but we usually know what the West Coast is voted before. Like, West Coast voting could be over for an hour, and they're like, okay, it's safe to call all these states. And then Florida's like, wait a minute, we got to find the last ballot box. A gator that ain't the ballot box. We can't find the ballot box in the swamp. A ballot box don't fit into the swamp. We got to find a truck. The truck had all the ballots on it. Oh, God damn it, we don't know what's happening out here. And, like, knowing them, they're probably going to take a whole box of ballots. But it's going to be gator meat, just like them Auburn Tigers, you know, and throw it inside a gator's mouth or something. Be like, oh, Florida gators, they're ravenous. They're going to eat you college football fans up for breakfast. You know? I mean, God only knows what the fuck they're going to do. They're like, oh, we're using those ballots for target practice. And then they shoot Hillary's name, and that's how she wins Florida or something like that. They're like, oh, she's lucky her name was on top in alphabetical order because we shot more ballots for her. But do you think Democrats will retake the Senate?
I think if they don't retake it, they'll tie. I think they have a good shot at retaking it. At the very least, I think they come away with a tie, with the V actually having an important role.
I think Kamala Harris is going to be my new senator, which I'm thrilled because I love Kamala Harris. She's attractive. I know Obama got in trouble when he said she was the hottest attorney general or something like that when she was the state attorney general for California. He goes, I'm not the hottest attorney general. And it's like, all right there, Trump Jr., you know, like he's coming out there. Obama reminds me of Drake. You know, whenever you see Drake out there, and you know Drake, like this Jewish Canadian kid who's always going to do these, I want that girl's ass up on me. And it never quite looks convincing, really. Like, he's always like he's trying a little bit hard or something. Like, he's not really Lil Wayne. Like, his sexual lyrics don't totally make sense. But you always see Drake with the hottest women. Serena Williams, Rihanna, they said he might have dated Nicki Minaj. I mean, pretty much anybody other than a liberal has a crush on Drake's dated them just about. Like, I'm sure if I wrote down a name, kept it in a secret diary or whatever, Drake would somehow get his psychic message and be like, I'm going to date that girl next. So Obama's kind of like the Drake of politics. Like, he's with Michelle, he's flirting with Kamala Harris. But I know when he says that Kamala Harris, he got in trouble, but she really is attractive. She'll be probably the most attractive senator that's ever been. People can take that any way they want. Like, it's not just about her looks. Well, I didn't say it was. Attractive can mean a lot of things. I mean, she's really smart. She's, like, passionate. She's powerful. I think she's going to be my new senator, and I think if we can just get rid of Rubio, if Patrick Murphy can beat him, and if whoever's running against Kelly Ayotte, I don't even know who it is, can drum her out of New Hampshire. And then, of course, Richard Shelby will be the surprise upset of the year if he can put it out of Alabama. If he loses a seat in Alabama, I don't even care if we take him at the Senate. You know, if he loses, they're going to be like, well, the Democrats didn't take it back, but we're going to just throw four Republicans out because this is a fucking miracle. Like, we're just going to kill John McCain or something. Like they deserve to take back the Senate if he loses.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. When Hillary wins and if they take back the Senate, do you think Republicans, sleazy as they are, will do some kind of emergency session and throw Merrick Garland in there at the last minute, which they've refused to do for 6 months?
I think so. You know, I think once they see some of the candidates that Hillary is going to throw up, I think they will.
That makes me so sick because McConnell has been like, well, we think the American people should have a vote. And then, you know, when they vote for Hillary in the Democratic Senate, the American people are idiots. We're going to put in who we want to, and they're going to put Merrick Garland in there. Like, they've made the whole thing sound like it's about democracy. And yet they wait until after the people speak, and then they're going to, like, not listen to the people and not let Hillary nominate who she... If Hillary wins, forget Merrick Garland. Like, she should get to nominate who she wants because she won.
Exactly.
And they stalled for 6 months. specifically to let people vote, and now they have, and then she should get to nominate who she wants. And I feel like it's just going to be so transparent when they put him in after she wins. Well, time will tell. Join us after the election when we'll have a full recap of all the events and all the goings-on in Congress and things. Michael, what's your web address for us?
It's blueinalabama.com.
And of course, you're from the Alabama Liberal. People, go vote November 28th. I mean, November the 8th, please. No, November the 8th, especially if you're a Democrat. Make sure you go vote and vote for Congress, vote for state Congress, all your down-ticket races, vote. All right, thanks for listening, everybody.